But as long as you're bearing it.
No problem.
Keep on.
So when did you, was it in response to the huge mass of information you got in the late 60s that you had, were forced to?
We were forced to, you couldn't handle it until you got it into some kind of order. Here mm-hmm. we were getting 1,000 questionnaires, each of them having 1,847 mm-hmm. questions. And it comes out to, well, some people gave more than one answer, some people didn't give any answer. But it came out to about 2.5 million responses. Well, that's a lot of responses. And we had to get them put into a computer storage so that we could sort them out and put them in alphabetical order and know what we had mm-hmm. and know what we didn't have, you see. So that was a big part of it.
What kind of technology was available to you then?
At that time, you put things into the computer either with punch cards, mm-hmm. which is pretty much superseded now, I think, yeah. But in any case, they also would scan some of the things. We tried scanning, and we didn't get very far. Scanners were primitive, and they made a lot of mistakes. We couldn't get our stuff in properly. We finally went to punch cards rather than scanning. Scanners also were hard to get at. There were some in in Beloit, and some in Milwaukee that we would try to use, but it makes the whole thing so complicated when you have to do that. We finally got our punch cards, and they were what we essentially had to use. And so, you see, they were being processed in Muscadet, of all places, and back and forth to Madison.
What was in Muscadet?
Mm-hmm.
What was it?
I don't know. It was done by a local company here, around mm-hmm. here, but they had some workers in Muscadet who did it for them. So it was just simply, I suppose, a matter of parceling it out, mm-hmm. this place and the next. But we knew that our work was being done in Muscadet. Yeah. It seemed a bit of a surprise. I think Muscadet is chiefly a rural community. And farming and so on is their chief activity. I think it is, but somehow they got into this thing. Anyway, the computer problem was to get everything into a program so that we could get it processed, sorting things out, getting them into alphabetical order so that we could recover them, indexing them. It took years to do all of that, and mostly because of the fact that the computer then didn't have the capacity. It simply could not store the mass of material that we had collected.
You must have had a room full of cards.
You could do it now, you know. Yeah. It would be very easy now. They worked on it to the point where they have tremendous storage capacity in quite small computers, but couldn't do it in 1970. So we did the best we could. We had some trouble in wherever we went. But finally, we did get it all sorted out, and then we were able to begin to edit the thing, that is to write up the different things. And each of my editors, I had perhaps six editors, I think, each of them had a letter of the alphabet to himself or herself, each one working on those. Mm-hmm. Well, that looked as though it was going to be terribly slow. I was hoping that we could get everything done and then print the whole thing in five volumes the way we wanted to, be done with it. But it was just too complicated, and so we finally decided we'd get out one volume, and we let the editors give up their personal letters. Mm-hmm. By that time we had A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and I. We're all done by the time that we decided to do only volume one. Now volume one has A, B, and C. It turned out that B was twice as big, more than twice as big as we expected it to be. And so more problems kept cropping up all the time, which we had to solve.
What were the more thorny ones?
What were the what?
More thorny problems.
Well, just problems of quantity,
mm-hmm.
And so on. We also had to do what you will find in the introduction to the dictionary, and I did that. That is to say, deciding what we wanted to put into this dictionary, what mm-hmm. ought to go into this dictionary. We called it the Dictionary of American Regional English. Okay, but what did we mean by regional? And mm-hmm. what, when we say American, what precisely do we mean? So, and English, of course, too, because we're talking only of the words that are part of the English language in America, and not foreign languages that happen to be spoken in America, too. If the foreign word has been fully adopted, as I mentioned, I think I mentioned to you that, after all, there were a lot of early Dutch words adopted, such as Santa Claus and boss and, mm-hmm. and cookie and various others, stoop, meaning a little porch. All of those are Dutch words that were borrowed way back in the days of Rip Van Winkle. But those are now fully American words, and English language words. They aren't Dutch anymore. But the words that are still foreign, as you know they're foreign when you say them, the pronunciation doesn't agree with English pronunciation. Or they're people know them and use them only when they're talking the foreign language. But those are not Americanisms. When you find the foreign word treated as a perfectly normal word in an American English context, then it's fully adopted, it's fully naturalized. And those we would put in, of course. But we had to define our terms.
Yeah. How did the idea for the maps develop?
Well, it was almost, you know, dialect maps are what you end with when you make a linguistic atlas.
Yeah.
But those are extremely elaborate maps. They have their huge page, and four times the size of an ordinary typewriter page or more. And then they're made with elaborate handwritten phonetic transcriptions on the page. The thing of New England is very elaborate. So that becomes expensive, and it's not necessary to do it that way. You can do it other ways, less expensively. We didn't ever plan on that. On the other hand, when you get a map, and you can look at a map and see, let us say, a visual aspect to distribution, you can say, well, this is a New England word, okay. But the moment you put it on a map and see just where in New England this word turned up in the course of our fieldwork, then you can say, yes, the map helps. The map helps very much. And I got the idea myself of mm-hmm. having maps for all the places, all the words in which we had a perfectly clear pattern. A pattern of grouping in some places and not being found in other places. Or perhaps, as in the case of something like, let's say, blind pig and blind tiger. Blind pig is the northern term, and blind tiger is the southern term. And as soon as you get them on a map side by side, you can just see it mm-hmm. perfectly clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can say it's northern, one is northern and one is southern, but you don't get as clear an idea of it as you do with a map.
Mm-hmm.
So I simply decided that if we could make maps that way, and then I worked out in a very simple way, I don't know nothing really about computers, but I worked out in a very simple way, a means by which a computer could be made to make these maps.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that that was an extremely useful tool. Because if you go to make a map or to put anything on a map, you find it's a pretty elaborate process. You have to be so exact, and you have to know what you're going after. And in fact, you more or less have to know what's there before you make the map at all. There's no use making a map unless you know what you're going to get out of it. With this thing, we could take the things we had gathered and have the machine make the map and put these things down, and we wouldn't know beforehand where they were going to appear.
Mm-hmm.
We could have done it very elaborately by hand, but the machine did it in 2 minutes.
Mm.
Result was that we could make a map for anything in which we had 20 responses or more. And the machine would simply grind the things out, and
mm-hmm.
we'd say, well, this one has a very clear regional pattern, so we'll put it in. And this other one is scattered all over the place, and it doesn't seem to make a pattern, so it's probably not regional. And we'd leave it out. That's the way we did the
maps. That brings us back a bit to the computer. It must have been Was it hard to keep up with the technology when it was? I mean,
it was hard for the technology to keep up with what we wanted.
Yeah.
But they did keep up, and we now we can use computer technology for many things, but they didn't really.
But you didn't have a problem of having all your information stuck in a place that was becoming outdated, or?
No, not really.
When did it?
What we have is this: if we had all the money in the world, which we don't, and if we were just beginning the project, which we aren't, we are already involved in the project, and we were always in a position where the computer couldn't do what we wanted, couldn't do it adequately. It wasn't ready to do what we wanted at that time. If we could have skipped 5 years and started again, it would have been fine, but we couldn't. So, anyway, the thing is then what was I talking about, the computer and our storage? Yes. Now, well, we thought at first that we could do then what we could do now, as I say, if we had all the money in the world. We could have every editor sitting there with a machine in front of him or her, a screen and a typewriter, you know, a word processor kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We could take that and have the editor compose the whole treatment of the word on the screen and correct it and get it printed out. We could do that if we had all the money. But we've got beyond that stage now. To try to put all of the material that we have now, these millions of responses, to try to put them into that kind of a computer storage now would take 2 years and $50,000. Mm-hmm. Well, it's too late for that. Now that we've got as far as we have, we'll finish it the way we're doing it, mm-hmm. which is perfectly good. We can make that more efficient in certain ways by using computers, but the computer simply wasn't ready to do the kind of job we wanted done. Mm-hmm. That's the truth of it.
Mm-hmm. I was told it's that the computer that you're using, the UNIVAC, was in danger of its existence, and that would have been a disaster.
The UNIVAC is necessary to us at present in the way we make the maps, and we're hoping that we can get the maps made for Volume 2 before the UNIVAC is immobilized or taken out altogether here, because if we have to convert, it's going to be very expensive mm-hmm. and time-consuming. It may delay getting Volume 2 out.
Is that in danger of occurring?
Yes, it is in danger of occurring. They're talking about getting the UNIVAC out in 1987. And here we're in 85 already. Mm. So you can't make the maps until the stuff is all edited, you see. You can make them fast, but you cannot make them until it's all edited, because you don't know which maps are worth putting in, and you don't know which features are going to be combined on the map, and so on. There's a very other details like that. So we have to have it all edited and ready, or nearly finished, by the time we start making our maps to go with it. And that means it's going to be a race with getting a UNIVAC out of there. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have to devise, for the other volumes, we'll have to devise some other means of getting the maps. But the maps are essential. They certainly are a very interesting and valuable feature of the first volume, I think you'll agree. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, are there any other problems then that you see in getting it out?
Our problem is always the problem of getting enough money to do it the efficient way. You know, if everything could be done ideally, it would cost some money, but it would be done ideally, and it'd be done faster, and might be done even a little bit better, possibly. But to get to do it ideally, it costs some money. Mm-hmm. And where are we going to get it? It's hard enough to keep going at all. When I say ideally, I'm thinking in terms of computers. As I said, we'd have to take a couple of years to get all our files converted, and that would be... By that time, I'd lose my editors, I'd lose all the momentum we have, I'd lose people who'd forget about the dictionary and so on. No, we've got to get it finished, and finish it as soon as we can.
Has getting the first
Getting the first volume out, at least we have proved that we have a good method. Mm-hmm. We're getting out a good product. So this is not the time to swap horses in midstream.
Right. But will it give you some momentum monetarily? You're getting a lot of mail, I know. But
yes, I'm getting a lot of mail. I don't know. I suppose we're getting some goodwill, and maybe eventually we can get something more. But we definitely need every day, now, at once, money enough so that I can hire a couple more editors. We are in danger of losing some staff because we can't plan ahead. Nobody should try to do a project like this and not be able to plan ahead. It's inefficient not to be able to plan ahead. The money we don't have is what we're losing, so to speak. Right. If we had it, we could do it more efficiently and less cost. So, well, I wish you were a millionaire. I think I would have convinced you.
Well, anything else you want to conclude with?
Oh, I don't know. It seems to me I've more than talked. Oh, heavens, yes. I've talked more than an hour.
Gone.
So,
well,
that's probably plenty.
Yeah.